Well, Dr. Saxton, Mr. Wilkins, and ladies and gentlemen, I would like to first thank you very much indeed for all the kind remarks that have been made about me, not all of which I feel are deserved. And to you, ladies and gentlemen, I would like to thank you for the way in which you've received these remarks. You know, I've come not to like the word retirement. What I would rather say is that from midnight tonight, I cease to be a member of the permanent civil service. And it's quite clear that a lot of people, including the Postmaster General in particular, seem to think that I shall know what to do with my time from tomorrow morning onwards. However, the years do pass by, and it is necessary for the older civil servants in particular to give way to younger ones, and one hopes in that way that a change, a little fresh blood and some change of outlook is to the general benefit of an establishment like this, and is indeed necessary in order to keep it alive and fresh in its particular field. I'm very honoured this afternoon to see that not only are there here members of the staff and some of their wives, but that there are also a few visitors whose presence I'm very glad to see and appreciate very much. Some of them have clearly been put to some personal trouble in making a journey here, and I would like just to thank them and say how much I am grateful to them for this mark of their appreciation. Then, and before I forget it, I must thank you all for this generous gift. At last I've tumbled to what it is. And as I understand it, you are suggesting that this will form an adequate substitute for the typing and clerical assistance that I've been able to enjoy while being a member at this station. I hope to revive my ability to type my own letters and perhaps papers. It's a long time ago, I must admit, since I handled a typewriter. But thank you very much indeed for your generosity and your kindness in giving this present. And in doing so, I would like to join my wife with the expression of thanks and say how much we shall both appreciate these gifts, both for what they are and as mementos that we shall carry and cherish for many years to come of the happy days that I and, to a lesser extent, my wife have enjoyed in the life of this research station. Today, I think, may perhaps be regarded in the future as the end of the second phase in the life of this radio research station. I say second deliberately because, as has already become apparent in some of the talks of Dr. Saxton and Mr. Wilkins, and as some of the older ones among you will remember, the fields here in Ditton Park were in use for various radio experiments in direction finding, wave propagation, studies in the ionosphere, for some 20 years or more before the final decision was made to establish here a permanent radio research station under the Department of Scientific and Industrial Research. I suppose it was the fact that the first chairman of our radio research board was Admiral of the Fleet Sir Henry Jackson that started the association between the radio, or as it was then called, the wireless section of the National Physical Laboratory, and the Admiralty Compass Observatory, who are our landlords still here in Ditton Park. And for many years, some of us used to commute between Teddington and Datchet, but it is now nearly 15 years since the decision was taken to sever, or at least considerably loosen, our connection with the National Physical Laboratory, and that we set to work to design and build our own research station. I've sometimes regretted having to use the word station instead of laboratory, but unfortunately, our departmental colleagues up the road at Halmondsworth had already adopted the initials RRL to indicate their road research laboratory under the same department. Well, at this time, as I've said, we decided to build our own research station, and Mr. Wilkins and I spent the best part of a year looking over the whole of the south of England to try and find a suitable site among the 20 or 30 disused airfields and other derelict areas of the countryside that were offered to us in response to our demand for open ground to do field work, remote from buildings, electrical conductors and so on. But after seeing many places which technically were very good, but when we came to think about where do we live, where do the staff live, where do their children go to school, and how does the Radio Research Board and the officials of the SIR get there, we came to the conclusion that we would have to make a compromise between accessibility and living somewhere near civilization and technical perfection, which can only be obtained in remote parts of the country. And so we decided to stay here, and then with the great help of the Ministry of Works, and particularly its architect, Mr. Snow, whom I'm very glad to see here this afternoon, he and his staff were very cooperative in meeting our requirements and even going out of their way, in some cases, from what they were normally used to do in the building line. We were able to get a building with a laboratory accommodation in much the form that we envisaged it, and I think, as events have turned out, in the 3 or 4 years that we've occupied this building, it has come up to our expectations. The building itself was opened by Sir Edward Appleton in this position, in this hall, just over 3 years ago, and I'm personally very sorry that Sir Edward was not able to come here this afternoon, but he has sent a letter of regret saying that he's very sorry that he couldn't come and see me out. Well, now, we've clearly made good use of the fields, the surrounding fields for aerial systems and outbuildings, which are so necessary for the conduct of our research programme. And I take my leave today in the knowledge that this station forms a central hub of a very live and active research group which has not only done good work in the past, but now has unrivaled opportunities to develop and exploit the possibilities provided by rockets and satellites as new tools for research on our upper atmosphere and the space beyond. The results of this work will not only considerably increase our knowledge of the Earth on which we live and its surroundings, but they will obviously also have far-reaching effects on the future of radio communications, navigation, broadcasting and television. I personally hope to have the opportunity for many years to come of watching the progress and consequent development at this station under my successor, to whom I trust you will be able to give the same loyal service and active assistance as you have rendered to me. But I think the time has come now for me to say goodbye and to wish the present and future members of the staff the best of good luck and success in continuing the work, the foundations of which have been laid over the past 40 years. But now, in thus saying farewell, I mustn't forget those of our colleagues who serve at what we call our outstations, at Inverness, on Ascension Island, in Singapore, and at Port Stanley in the Falkland Islands. Without their keenness to do their work and serve periods of duty of 2 or 3 years away from this central station, much of our experimental observation and research program could not be carried out. Many of us have conducted some of our experiments in ships and some in aircraft. I wonder now whether the time will come when members of the staff of this radio research station will be detailed for duty in satellites or space ships, or whether they will be sufficiently ingenious to avoid this need by the development of instruments which will automatically make the observations for them. Now, Dr. Saxon's already referred to the fact that I am not, as many of you might think, the oldest member of the staff, oldest in years of service, that is. As he reminded us, when I arrived at the National Physical Laboratory in the spring of 1919, I found Mr. Haxton there, already there, and indeed he was the only assistant I had for several years. As old boys, because they are not at present members of the staff, I'm very glad to see also Dr. Thomas and Dr. Barfield here this afternoon, and I'm sure they, on this occasion, will recall the happy days when we were a very small body, not very carefully controlled by executive officers and upper civil servants. And we had many happy times, and I feel that we did a great deal of our most useful work in those days. Another member of the present staff who has given a long and loyal service to radio work is Miss Chaplin. She came with us from the NPL with a considerable fund of experience obtained in various positions in the National Physical Laboratory, and in her present position, being in charge of the administrative and clerical staff at this station, we have, I think, been very fortunate in having the benefit of her knowledge and experience in matters of the department as a whole. Now, it may not always be clear to members of the staff, particularly junior staff, that there is a headquarters attached to our department. But those of us in senior positions, of course, do realise and appreciate the advice, encouragement and assistance which is given us by the Secretary of the Department and his staff. I've had a very nice letter this afternoon from the Secretary of the Department expressing his regret that he was unable to be with us, but of course we're very glad to see some members from headquarters, including Mr. Wooldridge and Mr. Edmonds, here this afternoon. As I've said, we appreciate the advice and assistance given us by headquarters, even though at times some of the individuals at headquarters seem to have an annoying habit of issuing official circulars and drawing our attention to Treasury regulations. But we take this all in good part, and after all, we are a government department, and it is necessary for us to be guided, if not actually disciplined, by codes of procedure in the disbursement of public money. Well, now, in conclusion, I would like to express my general appreciation and gratitude to all my colleagues, members of the staff in all grades, industrial as well as non-industrial, of this station. You may not quite appreciate it, but it's a fact that a director can do almost nothing without the active and loyal assistance and support of his staff. And I must say that I have had all of my share of these qualities from every member here at the Radio Research Station. At best, a director can perhaps see a little further than some of his colleagues, and he can realise the limitations as well as the possibilities of the effort and facilities which are available to him. Following that, the best he can do is to define a programme and try and see that the most profitable items on that programme are pursued first and assess some priorities to the order in which other items on the programme are pursued. I'm disclosing the limitations of a director as seen from the director's point of view. But I must say that I have nothing to complain of in the matter of the very great assistance and cooperation that I have always had from all members of the staff. But to go on with this theme, you appreciate that unless the office staff can deal with the typing and duplication of the necessary papers and correspondence, unless the measuring equipment and the aerials and the like can be designed and produced in our workshops, well then the scientific staff just cannot start their work. So we do operate as a team, and inevitably I think the output of the work is a reflection on the performance and ability of every single member of the staff. There's one final point I would like to take this opportunity of leaving as a sort of homily behind me. Many of you will know my weakness in this respect, but I do want to draw your attention to the fact that the main object of the work of a research station like this is to produce new knowledge. Now, unless this new knowledge is made available to those who can use it in the various applications of radio, then a good deal of the time and effort spent in acquiring that knowledge could be regarded as wasted. And I've always regarded it as the duty of the scientific and experimental officer staff to see that between them the job is not finished until it is properly described and written up in a paper, one or more papers, which can be made available for publication so that this knowledge may be disseminated throughout the world. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I have talked quite long enough. You've been sitting here now for a long time, and I would close by thanking you for all your kind remarks, thanking you for these gifts that you have presented to my wife and myself, and express my gratitude for past services which have been so freely rendered by all of you. And I close by offering the very best wishes for the future of this station. Thank you.